is the Stargirl After Show with Sarah and Sean. Your post-show breakdown of DC Stargirl with Easter eggs, exclusive behind-the-scenes info, and cast and crew interviews.
This is our destiny.
I finally know who I really am.
I'm Stargirl.
This is the Stargirl After Show.
Hey, Star fam, welcome to another episode of Stargirl After Show, sponsored as always by Stargirl.tv and DCTV.news, your best resources for news, media, and spoilers about Stargirl and other DC Comics properties. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sarah.
And we're back this week with Chapter 3, The Blackmail, written by Taylor Streets and directed by Walter Carlos Garcia, who is, when he's not directing, the stunt coordinator for the show.
Oh, really?
Yes. He previously directed, I think, episode 6 last season.
That was Face Off with Eclipso, right?
Yeah.
When he gets his body.
The one with the big fight in it.
Well, that makes sense for this episode then.
Right?
But we do not get a big fight right away because Sylvester is giving old downtown Blue Valley a try. He's walking around being friendly and smiling at people. They're saying hi. Someone's walking a pig down the street, which I thought was wonderful because I used to have a pet pig. And so that was just exciting. Yeah, a little Pepper nice. Potts belly pig.
It reminded me of Doc Hollywood with Michael J. Fox.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that movie, but he's a big town doctor who goes to small town.
Okay. And
all I really remember about the movie is at one point he's walking a pig. Someone says, "Mighty nice pig, Doc." That's about it.
They are not easy to walk when they don't want to go where you're going. They're very stubborn.
I feel like pig-headed is a phrase for a reason.
Exactly. But Sylvester goes ahead and asks the woman at the cart for the best cup of coffee that she has.
Her name is Sonia Sato.
Okay. Does that mean something?
No, it doesn't. But she has a full name in the script, and I don't know why.
Okay.
I don't know why she gets a first and last name, but she does.
Okay. Maybe it's like a tribute to someone.
Probably.
But apparently she doesn't make very good coffee because Sylvester takes a drink and spits it out and then heads over to Richie's Diner.
Yeah, I like he walks in. He says, like, everything is quaint here.
He comments to Maria that it is remarkably good tea. And she says it's the best in America, I've told.
Which is a very nice callback to last episode and the perfect cup of tea that she made for the Shade.
Mm-hmm. And Yolanda, this is the first time this season we've seen her working here, but we saw her there a lot last season.
And in the comic book.
Yeah.
I think the comic book was the first indication that we had that she was back working there.
Okay.
Her mom made her quit, and Maria was like, "Well, she's welcome back anytime. We love her here."
Oh, that's right. Yeah. But Yolanda checks in and asks how his breakfast is, and it's overdone. It's burnt. It's soggy.
Everything but the tea is terrible.
And Yolanda takes this opportunity to ask him about Ted Grant, because obviously Sylvester was on the team with him. She probably respects his opinion of Ted more than Pat, because Pat was the sidekick on the team and didn't go into all the battles with them. Wants to know what Ted Grant would think about her. And he tells her he would think that you're badass, that you're tough on everyone, just like him, saw people for who they really are. He says that she has good judgment for not letting Dragon King's daughter off the hook.
Yeah, and you brought up a really good point, which is that Pat's been the team's connection to the original JSA all this time.
Mm-hmm.
But now they have a full JSA member at their disposal. So it'll be curious to see like how that plays out in terms of everybody's relationship with Pat, if he's going to sort of supplant that mentor role.
Well, Pat better not be going anywhere, but I could see that coming into play.
Well, Pat's the murderer, so... Oh, no.
No, he will never be the murderer. And then it starts off with Sylvester asking, well, okay, so what do you do when you're not after the ISA or Eclipso? And Yolanda's like, well, there's school, there's church, and there's work. And he's like, well, I'm too old for school. Wasn't really much for church. I guess I'll give work a try.
And I love that Yolanda calls out, like, Courtney's been teaching you about balance, hasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not the first person to get this, like, lesson that she's passing on that she learned last season.
Yeah.
Obviously, she's been preaching that. Like, that's her big life lesson. She's like, I've had this epiphany. I'm going to tell everybody. You know how teenagers think that they discover things the first time and they're the first ever to discover it.
That's their job to share. Yep. Then we see through the window. Cameron's grandparents are looking in through there.
Lily and Sophus. I don't trust them.
No, well, obviously they're the murderer.
They're the murderer, yes.
All right, then we go over to the Dugan Whitmore house and Courtney made breakfast. This may be a first for her. I don't know, but she is really laying on the compliments thick. And she made waffles and it's just, oh, I just wanted to do this. I'm just happy to be making breakfast and all that. And then she's like, okay, let's talk murder. You know, here's what we know. The Shade was at the diner, so it wasn't him. The killer had incredible strength and the gambler was stabbed in the heart. And that's why there was all the blood. And Barbara's like, okay, that's too much murder talk. And Mike's like, doesn't bother me.
Just the right amount of murder talk. I like some good murder talk with my breakfast.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't?
You are wearing a Camp Crystal Lake shirt right now.
It's true.
Speaking of murder talk.
And then they talk a little bit about Sylvester. That, you know, he already went out this morning. He's on a walk to find balance. And then enter the Crocs. Yeah, balance is important, starting with balanced breakfast. And they
tofu bowl? Oh, that's a hard no.
I would try it.
No, I don't eat anything with tofu in it. Because I've tried.
Yeah.
Many, many times. You know, people have that thing where they're like, oh no, if you don't like tofu, this thing, this is the different tofu. You'll see, try it. And then you try it. And it is never different. It is always the same. It is a slimy cube of grossness that is never made better by what it is in. No matter what anyone tells you. I will stand by that. I'm sorry if we lose listeners over my hard no tofu stance, but I'm going to stick to my guns here. No.
I grew up with a vegetarian sister, and so we had tofu sometimes. So I am not opposed to it, but it's not something I would pick out on the menu to eat.
I got to say, there are so many really great plant-based meat alternatives now.
Oh, absolutely.
That tofu can go extinct. I don't think anyone will miss it.
I mean, I think some people will.
No.
Okay.
Nope. Because
go the way of the gambler.
There are vegetarian and vegan options so much better than tofu. Look, my whole tofu diatribe is my way of saying that there is still evidence that the Crocs are evil.
Yes.
And that's force feeding people tofu.
Crocs staring down Mike like, dig in.
Oh, yeah.
That was just perfect.
I actually applauded at that.
Yeah.
Just so subtle but menacing. Whole family's on the program now.
All right. And then we are over with Our Night in the car. I'm going to keep calling them Our Night, just kind of willing that into existence. We'll see what happens.
Why don't you call them hashtag Our Night?
We can do that. Hashtag Our Night. We got Beth on the phone, but on her goggles with her parents, and they are very overwhelming trying to talk about everything going on, all the superhero business.
So you know what just occurred to me? She can see them in her little heads-up display. I think each of them just have an eyeball on their FaceTime.
Yeah, it could be that, or it could just be like a static photo of her.
Yeah.
Rick says that he thinks it's cool that her parents are so into her being a superhero. And this is when we find out that his Uncle Matt took off and he doesn't care where he is.
Would you?
I'd be curious because I'm sure Rick doesn't know about Pat, you know, confronting Matt in the hospital, and the audience doesn't know exactly what happened there. And I hope it stays that we don't know exactly. I like the ambiguity there.
It seems very in character for Matt just to like get a little bit of pushback and take off. I'm sure the 50 grand that he was given to look after Rick is long gone at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
So he's just taken off. So now Rick is, I guess, just living on his own in the farmhouse, which will probably just be in his name when he turns 18.
I would think so, yeah.
So, hey, free farmhouse.
All right. And then the goggles get a ton of documents from an unknown source. And Beth is trying to comprehend what's going on and says that she thinks the gambler was blackmailing someone. And then we cut to Cindy, who is forwarding all that information from the gambler's laptop.
Now, it seems as if she is sending information about the Crocs to drive suspicion away from her. Ergo, she's obviously the murderer.
Exactly. And then she's very curious about his files on Dragon King. And so she's trying to log into that, but doesn't have the right password. And just like in Jurassic Park, this little pop-up animation comes and, you know, won't let her go any farther.
I don't know if you can see in my notes, but I wrote Nedry, like Dennis Nedry from Jurassic Park.
Didn't say the magic word.
Any Jurassic Park reference is a good Jurassic Park reference.
Yeah.
If it's a reference to the original movie.
Exactly.
All the other movies, take them or leave them. But OG 1993 Jurassic Park, oh yeah.
Perfect. Yes, I love that. And then we go to school and Cindy is waiting for Courtney by her locker. Calls Courtney New Girl again, a callback to first season.
Courtney will always be New Girl.
Courtney tells Cindy that the gambler was blackmailing someone, and Cindy is not surprised in the least. But when she gets called out on it, she's just like, birds fly, fish swim, blackmailers blackmail.
Not suspicious at all. She's obviously the murderer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Courtney's disappointed in the gambler. Like, I really thought that he was trying to change for his daughter. And you can kind of see a little softer side of Cindy, it seems, where she says, you know, bad fathers will talk to talk, but it doesn't mean anything unless they follow through. I think if anyone can understand having a terrible parent like Courtney does, it is Cindy.
I would say to a far greater extent than Courtney yes. does.
Well, she seems a little more hardened off that she doesn't care as much.
Can you imagine like them talking about their fathers and Courtney being like, my dad took a locket, and Cindy's response?
Yeah. Courtney probably knows better than to open that up. I don't know. It would be a fun conversation to see. But that's also probably why Courtney is giving Cindy a second chance as much as she is.
I mean, Courtney sees the best in everybody.
Yeah.
That will always be her true superpower. It will always be the heart of this show, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that Courtney is trying to give everyone the benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
Which is a hard thing to do when you're trying to catch a murderer.
It is, yeah.
But she pulls it off.
She does, so far.
Can you imagine Hercule Poirot going through an adventure, like just coming up with reasons why everyone must be innocent?
I feel like that would be if I was going through.
But it works.
It does. And then she sees Cameron, goes over to say hi to him, and he just ignores her and walks away.
So while Courtney is investigating this murder and trying to get to the bottom of it and find the killer, she goes up to Cameron, who I think the last time we saw them, they were doing just fine.
Yeah.
And then he just cold shoulders her, no pun intended, and walks away. Ergo, he's obviously the murderer.
Exactly. He knows she's on to him.
Yes. I will be doing this joke all season long.
All right. And then we cut over to the American Dream. Paula grabs Barbara, saying, we have a situation. The cake was a huge hit. It's a total nightmare. And now they want me to make an initiation speech at the meeting tomorrow. And she has no idea what to do. Barbara, the ever helpful person that she is like, well, you know, talk about what you're excited about for whatever the Women's Rotary Club does. And what do they do? And then Paula's whisper, I don't know, was perfect.
Killed me. I laughed so hard.
I did too. And then I rewound it and watched it again.
Joy is amazing.
She really is.
No. It's like so terrified.
But also, what does a Rotary Club do?
Why are you looking at me?
I don't know.
I feel like nobody really knows. And this scene was written because no one could even find the answer.
My grandma's on the Rotary Club, but I don't know what she does on it. Something about businesses?
I bet your grandmother doesn't know what she does on it.
Probably not.
She probably bakes German chocolate cakes.
And then Tim comes in I did not think it was possible for the American Dream to have a worse employee than Icicle, but there's Tim. And he does this like comedic, like, oh, your proposal, and mew, and thumbs down.
My notes are, Tim still sucks.
That sums it up. Barbara says to Paula that that's her new manager and the reason why she will be up late working on a new proposal. And then she says, I have to get back to work. And this is when I realized that they really are friends, because she is setting a boundary saying, I need to get back to work. And Paula is accepting it, and she is leaving so that Barbara can get back to work. She is learning social interaction.
I don't understand the structure of the American Dream, because she made clear that Tim is not her boss. And yet Tim is in some position in which his disapproval of her proposal requires her to stay late and rework that proposal.
Yeah.
I mean, they're clearly doing stuff by council now since Jordan's been gone. They've been voting on things.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it doesn't have to be unanimous or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you remember back in season two, Barbara had her proposal about the Oakville sewing machine factory to reopen.
Mm-hmm.
And Janet was opposed to it. Barbara made her appeal about it, and everyone voted, and they all raised their hands. And Janet begrudgingly raised her hand as well, making it unanimous. So that's why that went through. I wonder if anyone can just kill a whole proposal with their single vote against.
Yeah, that could be.
Which means that she would have to win over Tim in order to get her plans through.
Which also fits in well with your theory that he is just like Councilman Jam.
Yeah, jamming up the system. If anyone doesn't understand who Jeremy Jam is, go watch all of Parks and Rec as soon as this podcast is over, and we'll talk about it more next week. Mm-hmm. Personally, just you and I, we'll talk about Parks and Rec.
All right, and then over at the pit stop, Sylvester is looking for a job, reading an ad for a farmhand, while Pat and Zeke are up there working on Stripe. There's just a lot of great dialogue here, where Zeke's talking about his second cousin Melvin has a pig farm, and Sylvester just going, shocker. And he's like, well, I can put in a good word for you. And Pat's just like so supportive, like, thank you, Zeke. Like, that's so nice of you.
You'll notice a runner throughout the episode. Every time Sylvester is contemplating a job or reading about a job, he has some reason not to do that job.
Oh, yes.
Later on, it was sandwich artist. And his excuse was, oh, it takes years of study to master that.
Yeah. And he's like, I have to be at least as employable as the other JSA members. And Pat's like, well, Dr. Midnight was a surgeon, and his excuse for that is too icky.
Yep.
Besides all the schooling he would have to go to.
Mostly the icky thing, though.
Our man was a chemist.
Nerd.
To which he says, lab nerd. Which this supports my theory that Cindy is going to help Rick to fix the hourglass, because she is a chemist, and so was Rick's dad.
Alan Scott ran a broadcasting company, which is in the entertainment industry, too many headaches. Which is a nice nod, a little meta nod, if you will, because can confirm, lots of headaches.
Oh, yes. Is that canon like with the comics? Was Alan Scott in the entertainment business?
Not the entertainment business. He ran Gotham Broadcasting Company, GBC.
Okay.
I think it was a radio station initially and then became a TV station.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I think originally he was an engineer, or maybe he was an engineer in the post-crisis continuity. I can't recall. At some point, he was an engineer. At some point, he ran a broadcasting company.
Okay. Then Zeke talks about how he grew up in the salvage yard, and that's all he wanted to do was take things apart and put it back together. Sylvester says, well, all I am is Starman. Zeke gives a great inspiring speech that Sylvester's not junk. He's salvage. He can turn himself into something new. And kind of goes over Sylvester's head.
I felt like that was Joel McHale just like doing his best Joel McHale at that point. He's like, sorry, I sometimes get really self-involved. Are we still talking about cars, or was that a metaphor about me?
And, you know, Pat's like, no, we're going to get this done. Keep a good attitude. Then at lunch, the JSA is at their usual table. Beth says that the blackmail was coming from a payment from an alias of Lawrence Kroc. aka Crusher, aka Sportsmaster, which fits with the Thunderbolt saying that the killer has many names.
Oh, I didn't even put that together. Obviously, Croc's the killer.
Exactly.
But Courtney does not want anyone telling Sylvester because he'll just fly off the handle like...
She does. I thought that was great. Beth was like, oh, like you do.
Yeah, she wasn't even like throwing shade.
No, she was like excited about.
Yeah, she's like, oh, yeah, like you. You guys are so alike. That's so great.
Yeah, and she's like, no, like you did with the shade. Blackmail does not mean killing, so.
But Courtney does need to hear that, like, that real talk also.
Yeah.
Like, don't forget, it wasn't so long ago that you were the one flying off the handle.
Yes. And she is saying that we need to be sure before taking Artemis's parents away that they're actually guilty first. And then we go to Cameron in class and the teacher.
Miss Woods.
Yeah, Miss Woods, who is the same one who Rick had his whole interaction with last season, right?
Yes. Last season, Miss Woods accused Rick of cheating on his math test, which is why he had to go to summer school that he didn't actually attend.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she found that she was wrong about him, she apologized. She brought him college pamphlets on the 4th of July, the day that Rick beat his uncle into a coma because of the Eclipso visions.
Yeah.
But the point is that Miss Woods started off doubting Rick and then realized she was wrong to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's now changed because of that and is trying to be better for the students.
Yeah.
And give them the benefit of the doubt.
Which is wonderful. And I think more people should do that. And she is being very vulnerable with Cameron in saying that I put up walls even in high school. And now, you know, teachers avoid me. And so I'm just offering to talk to you about what's going on. Cameron snaps on her just as Rick is coming in. And Rick, of course, will find an excuse to be rude to Cameron. Do they have a history, I'm forgetting, of why they don't like each other?
No, I think Rick just doesn't like him because he's Icicle's kid.
Well, even before he knew that, though, didn't he already dislike him?
I mean,
it seems like Rick hated everyone at first.
Remember, he did. It's true. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. He just doesn't like him. Sometimes people don't like people.
That's fair.
For reasons or not reasons.
So they have a little bit of a spat there. Rick and Cameron do. As Cameron is out walking in the parking lot, he sees.
Actually, let me rewind a little bit. Because I love that Rick, yes, Rick will have any excuse to antagonize Cameron. But I love that he's standing up for Miss Woods.
Yes, it is really great that he's doing that.
Her faith in him has engendered a sense of loyalty. He's got a sense of loyalty toward her.
Mm-hmm. And then once out in the parking lot, Cameron sees Rick's very recognizable bright yellow car and shoots an icicle straight into the tire.
Yep. Not much more to say about that.
I don't know, because this is showing that he does have control when he wants it. So what is it that gives him the control and what is it that makes him not have that, which causes his hand to freeze up when he's trying to paint? Or what makes him freeze up and kill the gambler? I don't know.
Good point.
All right. And then we get Cindy coming over to the Whitmore Dugan house. Sylvester answers the door. And Cindy's like, oh, yeah, I'm here for the JSA meeting. You know, we're going to talk about how the gambler was blackmailing the Crocs. Didn't they tell you about that?
Of course, there is no JSA meeting. She just went to do the very thing that everyone agreed not to do.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Which is to tell Sylvester. And she suggests a team up. And he is not having it. Not by a long shot.
He is so rude to her. She is Dragon King's demon spawn. He doesn't trust her. She's a dime a dozen cheerleader with daddy issues. And he says, I'm not like the others in Blue Valley. I'm Starman. And he slams a door on her. And then he grabs a staff and goes to go confront the Crocs. Fortunately, Mike overheard it because he was possibly eavesdropping, possibly just there. But I feel like it was Mike. He was eavesdropping.
He was probably looking for clues as to how he can get ahead of everyone else in figuring out who the killer is.
Yeah.
So obviously, Mike is the killer.
Wouldn't be his first murder.
It's true. Wow. Took that real dark, Sarah.
And then over here at Bell's store, we get an announcement that it is closing in 5 minutes. Oink, oink. What is with all the pig references? Is it about like the pig-headedness that Sylvester is going through in this episode?
All right. You dragged it out of me. You know the pig that we saw being walked earlier?
Mm-hmm.
That's the murderer.
I knew it.
So this girl calling out over the PA that they're closing in 5 minutes, that's Christina Baskett, who we interviewed last season and who is Stargirl's stunt double.
Yeah.
This is her speaking role for the season. And did you notice what her name tag said?
No, I didn't.
Courtney.
Oh, really? That's cute.
Her name is Courtney. It's worth noting that the director of this episode, as I said at the top of the episode, is Walter Garcia, the stunt coordinator. So that's probably why he opted to stick her in there.
So does she do stunts for anyone besides Breck?
I don't think she does on this show. A lot of people do multiple stunts, but being the title character, I feel like Breck probably needs her own dedicated person. And in fact, I know that at some points she has two stunt doubles.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering because she probably wasn't being used for stunts in this episode. And so I wonder if that's why he decided to cast her as that role to include her in it.
Oh, no, she's also Joel McHale's stunt double.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got the same look. All right. So the Crocs are just living their best little normal happy life, shopping and getting their groceries. Crusher tries to sneak some steak sauce into his jacket for the thrill of taking something, and Paula shuts him down. You know, she says it's wrong to steal. Also, you can't have that because of the sodium. And he's like, oh, well, I can have it on a cheat day. And then Starman stepping in there, did you kill the gambler on a cheat day?
In the middle of all this, we do cut away at one point to Courtney finding out from Mike that this is going on.
Yeah.
But with that said, let's just talk about the fight, because this is a really amazing fight.
It is fantastic. The way that the two of them fight together, like the way he throws her and they just are completely in sync all the time. It is just phenomenal.
Their synchronicity it's such a great callback to seeing them fight together back in 106,
mm-hmm.
the first JSA battle of the new JSA.
Yeah.
The way they play off of each other, like that's all just such amazing choreography. And those two sell it so well, where you just feel like they can intuit one another. They don't have to look at each other to communicate what the next move will be. Like, it's all almost by instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they're able to, like, hold their own against Starman while not having their suits, not having their specialized weapons, they're just, like, going at it. I don't know, there's one point where they're both just, like, pretty much walloping him.
Yeah.
Until he takes them both down with the staff.
Yeah, they have him pinned down, and if he didn't have the staff that he could call back to him, yeah, they would have beaten him.
I also, you know, I talked about this when I interviewed Joel in season one, but he had barely been Starman at that point. But in this, you see more of it. The vast difference in how Starman uses the staff versus Stargirl.
Mm-hmm.
It's more brutal, more straightforward.
Yeah.
Whereas hers is more balletic, more acrobatic.
Yeah, for sure.
In fact, we forgot to mention this last episode when he does his little training with her and he says, show me what you can do. Like, he's very impressed.
Mm-hmm.
He says, oh, maybe you should be teaching me.
But he clearly knows what he's doing with it. I love that at one point Croc just says to him, we done? And Sylvester just goes, no, and continues the fight. But it scared all the people that were in the store. They're all running away. He ends up throwing them out of a window. And then in the parking lot, after blowing up a car, he has the staff just like floating over his shoulder. Like, he's not even holding it. We haven't seen Courtney do something like that, right? Like, the staff has acted on its own volition, but she's never like controlled it and had it hovering there ready to strike.
No, I don't know if he's controlling it or if they're just being partners in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really cool visual, though.
Oh, yes. And it seemed a lot more threatening than if he was holding it up there.
Yeah, even if he's not controlling it, I think that it's feeding off his intention, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not the kind of thing that Courtney would do because it feels aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Courtney would even be in that mind space.
Yeah, that's true.
Head space to have it be like that, which is just another great example of the difference in usage.
Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, he can't just end the Crocs right here. And I was like, is Courtney going to come back same as last episode and call the staff away from him? I was like, I don't want that to be a thing. I am so happy that the stripe that comes in lands and tells him that that's enough. The fight's over. Walk away, Sylvester.
It was good. And I always love seeing Stripe because
mm-hmm.
I think he was only in use for one episode last season. I think the finale was.
Yeah, because he was broken.
Yeah.
So early on. Yeah.
Because Artemis and Isaac took it down.
Yeah.
And then it was being repaired. And, you know, I'm sure there were budgetary concerns with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, break the robot to save on VFX costs.
Makes sense from a business standpoint.
But this season, we're three episodes in. We've already seen Stripe go for a flight twice.
Yeah.
So that ends the fight right there. And we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back for the rest of the episode.
Stargirl After Show. Stargirl After Show.
Now we're into the aftermath of the fight back at the Whitmore Dugan house.
Where, once again, the people in trouble are on the couch.
It's the trouble couch.
It is.
The couch of shame.
And so Crusher and Paula are explaining that they were being blackmailed for ISA crimes. But they were ones that they didn't even commit, but...
Supposedly.
Right. And they're like, well, but we can't prove it because they're all dead. So what can they do? They did not want to risk losing their daughter again by going to jail. So they just went ahead and paid them.
And I like the little note here that they're only out of jail right now and free because of a legal loophole.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can further explain that legal loophole, it is a legal loophole. We don't want to explain it and we don't care.
Okay, that's fair.
We just need to address that they're out of jail and they're not on the run. They're not fugitives.
Right.
That's what's important to note here. I feel like it's probably hard to buy or rent a house if you are currently wanted by the law.
Probably.
Let alone restart your gym and all of that.
Yeah.
So this probably didn't need to be said. Like the fact that they're interacting with their community and not hiding who they are or hiding at all should have let us know this. But this way we know it's not something overlooked.
Yes.
Because if you recall, in 213, do you remember why they were out of prison?
It was some kind of technical glitch, right?
No, not then. Artemis broke them out.
Oh, okay.
So sometime between the end of season two, well, I guess sometime in the end of season two, they got out on some sort of technicality.
So my headcanon is going to be that the gambler decided to, hack into the system and cause whatever glitch technicality that allowed their release because he was trying to make amends.
I don't know that that makes sense to me.
Okay.
I think that maybe it's because no one could prove that Crusher and Paula were Sportsmaster and Tigress.
Yeah, but I feel like that's not a technicality.
Well, it's a loophole. Like, everybody knows that it's them, but they couldn't.
They just couldn't prove it.
They couldn't prove it. And okay. So their convictions got overturned on appeal. Something like that. That's not insider information. That's me coming up with an explanation right now on the fly.
All right. So with the blackmail payments, they stopped 2 months ago because he stopped asking for them. And right before he died, he paid them back every cent that they had paid. Crusher admits that he went to go see him on that the day he was murdered.
Well, going back to him paying them back every cent.
Mm-hmm.
You remember last episode I mentioned how he seemed happy stepping into his trailer?
Yeah.
I feel now, looking back, that was sort of a thing of like, he's happy starting his new life in this new place that he's earned
mm-hmm.
legitimately. It's not ill-gotten gains that are paying for it.
Yeah.
He's paid back the blackmail that he got from them. And since it was right before he died, he probably sold some grand house or something.
Yeah.
In order to pay them back. And so this was him stepping into his new life as an honest man. And that's what he was happy about. Not the admittedly very nice trailer.
I think you're right. That makes a lot of sense. And when he was stepping into that trailer, Crusher does admit that he did go to see him that day because he didn't know what he was up to. He thought he was coming back to blackmail them and get more money. Admits that he got too worked up. And so he left so that he didn't do something that he didn't want to do. And they didn't tell them about it because they're trying to protect themselves. Don't want to lose Artemis. But whoever killed Sharp, it wasn't them.
Obviously, it was Artemis.
Probably.
Artemis is the killer. You heard it here first, everybody.
All right, and then down in the basement, Sylvester blows up at Pat.
Furious. Probably the maddest we've seen him.
Oh, yeah. How dare you do this? You're my sidekick, not theirs. And Pat's like, no, I am no one's sidekick. And I'm like, good for you, Pat. You keep this up.
Yeah, the days of Pat being a sidekick are over, and he is vehement about that.
Yeah.
Except I bet Court still considers him to be her sidekick, and I don't think he argues with it.
No.
I think he understands that there's absolutely no point in arguing with Courtney almost ever.
Yep. And Pat, you know, kind of lays it all out there. He's like, you cannot just do this. You cannot destroy everything around.
Sets a bad example.
It's for Courtney. And he's like, what are you talking about? And he explains everything about how Courtney thought that he was her father and how she holds him on a pedestal.
And to his credit, he softens a lot at that.
He does. A shocking amount.
I think he has a real soft spot for Courtney.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Cosmo choosing Courtney is all it takes for him to respect her.
Yes.
Because I feel like Sylvester respects the staff more than any other human that he knows.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And if the staff trusts her, then obviously she's good people and he wants to do right by her.
And then I wonder if there's a small part of him, because he had such a terrible relationship with his parents. He didn't have kids, but you know, Pat's saying that you're in this father role to her, and he's thinking, I need to be better than my parents ever were to me.
Yeah.
But I mean, Pat tells him everything. He tells him about the locket that Courtney's dad came and took. Tells him about how he punched Courtney's dad.
Laid him on his ass.
But not proud of it.
Yeah, but Sylvester was proud of it.
Yes. And then Sylvester makes a small mention about not even having a costume anymore, which I forgot that in the first season, Courtney took his costume and remade it into her own.
And I mean, it was already a little bloody in the first place.
Right, yeah.
Though it does astonish me that these guys each only have one costume.
Yeah, that's true.
So now I can't look at a superhero without thinking, God, they must smell so bad.
I'm sure there's some kind of technology that helps with the inventing of them that they don't smell.
Episode 104 would beg to disagree.
Which one was 104?
That was Wildcat.
Oh, okay. Yes.
When she puts on the suit, she says that it smells like a gym bag, and then the helmet smells even worse. So, yeah, no, they're all stinky all the time, unless they have downtime to wash their suits, which there's plenty of downtime in Blue Valley, so.
That's true.
They're good. But like the old school JSA, they must have just smelled bad all the time.
Probably.
Sticking to it.
I mean, yeah, what would they do if there was an emergency and their suit was in the wash? That would suck.
I kind of have those kinds of thoughts about things all the time. There was a moment in Stranger Things season 4 where I turned to my wife and I said, they must smell so terrible. They have got to just reek right now. And then two characters kiss. And I was like, ugh.
Ugh. Anyways, we are back at the JSA cafeteria. Or JSA table in the cafeteria.
And no, it's the JSA cafeteria.
All right. They I took mean, over that's the whole all high we school. Do there.
Yep.
And talking about the Crocs didn't kill Gambler. You know, who could it be? Cindy, she did exactly what you said not to do and went straight to Sylvester and then enter Cindy.
Her explanation makes sense to me.
Yeah, I buy it.
That she wanted to earn Sylvester's respect so that the others would respect her because they respect him.
Yeah.
So obviously what she needs to do, she needs to earn the staff's respect Because the staff respects her, Sylvester will respect her. And then because Sylvester respects her, the others will respect her. So she needs to go one step further and get the staff to respect her.
That might be harder than getting Sylvester.
All she has to do is listen to this podcast and our assessment that Sylvester will trust anyone the staff trusts. Bada bing. Done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she mentions that he's kind of an ass talking about Sylvester. And I'm like, that is a huge understatement. But I guess she does have pretty thick skin.
Yes.
Courtney tells her, you do something like that again and you are off the team. Cindy says, got it. And then she sits down and joins them.
Now, wow. Because it's the first time Cindy has like responded to anything without like some sort of snark.
Yeah.
She was just legitimately like, got it. Yes. You're the boss. I listen to you.
Yeah. Knew that she was in the wrong.
Which is new for her.
And then go over to possibly my favorite scene of the episode, which is Paula giving her speech.
Look, we can hashtag our night all we want, but I friendship these two so much.
I agree.
I had to separate it like that because I realized friendship is actually a word.
Yeah.
But I ship this friendship very, very much. And I love this whole runner through the season so far.
I think it is great because you can hear how shaky Paula's voice is. And then as soon as she sees Barbara, and she wasn't expecting her to come, it's not like she asked her to go or anything. Barbara came up because she wanted to support and gives her a little wave. And that's all Paula needed to have her confidence.
Furthermore, let's point out, this is Paula Brooks. This is Tigress. She was accosted by a superhero at the grocery store today and didn't flinch. She has stood up to all manner of people and things in her life and is not afraid of anything. Except, apparently, public speaking.
Yep.
She was shook. And then Barbara comes in and shows her some support and this friendship just blossoms.
All right. And then we go back to the lockers at school and Cameron comes up and apologizes to Courtney.
Thank God.
She's asking like what's going on. And he said he doesn't think he's ready to talk about it yet. And so she says, well, we can go for a walk if you want. That's the start of Camney there. Then we go to Sylvester in the basement. He's going through the gambler JSA file, not finding anything, and talking to Cosmo and like, okay, we must have missed something at the crime scene. We need to go back. And then decides to respect the rules and he doesn't take the staff with him.
Trying to be a better star man.
Yeah, it's not his turn. Then we cut to Courtney and Cameron walking around and cute little playful nudging and then almost holding hands.
Ooh, so close.
Cameron realizes, oh, can't do that. What if my hand freezes?
You know, what is it that I didn't even realize, like, that he's worried about freezing her hand?
Oh, I mean, that was my assumption.
No, you're right. You're completely right. And I just took it as residual nervousness about whatever his current weirdness is, you know?
Yeah.
But that's a very good point. And it's honestly embarrassing that I missed that.
I miss a lot of stuff.
So we get to like this, it's not a montage really, but it's just a series of things happening in rapid succession.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what that's about. So I skipped it.
I feel like maybe it was allaying the possibility that the grandparents were going out possibly to the RV.
Because they're obviously the murderer.
Exactly. So they need to hurry up and get their jackets on. Just like Sylvester's getting his on to go leave. Barbara's working on her proposal as Paula is at that jerk Tim's office at the American Dream.
And having a talk about being much, much nicer to somebody.
Yeah, to Sarah, to Susan, whatever her name is. Tell her to let it go. God, he is so terrible.
Yeah. Whoever that woman is, I feel real bad for her.
And we get a quick shot of Cindy still trying to get in Dragon King files. And then we see the TV screens again. And someone is watching them. Someone wearing a black glove.
Yes. So we haven't seen these TV screens. We've seen the feed from them on Gambler's laptop.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're seeing where they're actually being viewed.
Not a very nice place.
This person all in black, whoever it is, obviously the murderer.
Exactly.
And then Pat is sewing what certainly appears to be a superhero costume for Starman.
And I wasn't sure what was going on with Mike looking in and seeing that. So Mike sees it, but he doesn't say anything. But it was kind of hard to read his reaction, if he was jealous or if he was glad that his dad was helping out Sylvester.
I read it as he was going in to say something to him and then was like, oh, he's busy, I'll come back.
That makes sense too. There hasn't been a whole lot of Mike with the rest of the crew. Like, he was at breakfast where he had that delicious tofu quinoa, but otherwise it's been him and Jakeem.
Which I'm completely okay with.
Yeah, I'm just wondering when in the season they're all going to meet up for something.
Well, we'll see. Our cast does keep expanding.
Yeah.
And so it is easier to keep them in their own little groups a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it doesn't get into like Walking Dead territory.
Yeah.
Where you go like several episodes without seeing half your cast.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you finally do see them, you're not seeing the other half of the cast for several episodes.
That's a little hard.
Yeah. Walking Dead got a little too broad there.
All right. And then we wrap up the episode with Sylvester at the crime scene, looking around.
With no staff.
Just a flashlight. He is pulled into the air and then subsequently dropped down. And episode ends with him laying there bloody and unconscious.
And you know what this made me think of? How eagles eat turtles.
Interesting.
An eagle will swoop down and pick up a turtle and carry it high in the sky and drop it so they can crack into its shell and then go eat the meat.
So something's trying to eat Starman.
Hear me out here. An eagle is obviously the killer.
Exactly.
Or,
I mean, hey, those owls.
What if Hawkman isn't dead?
That could be too.
Hawkman is the killer. Solved it.
Hootie. Hootie could come back. Maybe owls do that too.
I feel like Sylvester might be a little big for Hootie to pick up.
I think you're underestimating Hootie.
I mean, one eagle can carry two hobbits from Mordor to Rivendell.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It was clearly an eagle.
So that's it. We wrapped up this episode. Sarah, where can people find you on the internet?
So you can find me in my other podcast on fandomlim.com. I'm on a Swift review, which reviews the Tom Swift TV show, and also on What's New Nancy Drew, which reviews the Nancy Drew TV show. And Sean, where can our listeners find you?
I have podcasts also on fandomlim.com. Table Reads is one of them. And then Gizh, G-I-S-Z-H, is my other one. Listen to them to find out what they're about. In the meantime, also be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at StargirlPod. We have some exclusive content there and ramblings and musings about things.
And if you're interested in any of the merch, you can go to merch.stargirlaftershow.com and check out what we got there.
Oh, good point. Because we do have a Knives Out inspired season 3 poster that everybody should go buy. I'm very excited about it.
It's beautiful.
That's it. That's our show. We'll see you next week for chapter 4. Subtitle, I'm not telling you right now. Until then, have a super great day.
Stargirl After Show is a production of Fandom Limb Media.